All right, thank you. Good morning, everyone. It's Commissioner Brian Culk, we're meeting at 12:04 of the Capitol today. It's April 24th, approximately 10 a.m. for our regularly scheduled commission meeting. A lot going on, I guess, this week. The closing up in the session, we've got a couple weeks to go. The PSC budget is still in limbo. The commissioners just attended a meeting at 9:30, and there was no movement from either the House or the Senate. And so now we're anticipating a 11:30 meeting dealing with IT, and really our budget is tied up with the Attorney General's Oil and Gas and Water Commission on what to do with IT services. So for the rest of the budget, it looks like we're going to, if all goes as now, the three of the four weights and measures positions will be retained. The pipeline safety position will be added. A position of public utilities will be added. The legal defense fund, if you will, is going to be go from zero to anywhere. It looks like it might be $900,000 of authorization. There could be some changes, of course, because the governor has not signed these, and quite honestly, the House and the Senate haven't voted on them, but it appears the only contentious point right now between the two chambers is the IT piece. So quite honestly, I'm very happy with where the budget is at right now as far as what we know, and I think it'll allow us to do what we have to do the next 2 years. The IT piece is a very big piece, and I know that Commissioner Crisman and Commissioner Fedorchik have spent a lot of time on that as well, but excluding that issue, I think the budget session has proceeded very well for us. So that'd be the only comments that I would have. I'd turn it over to my colleagues. Randy?
I have nothing really further to add. You did a good job of covering the situation with our budget. And the fact that it's just an ongoing moving target, like all the budgets are, until the governor signs them, I guess.
Thank you, Randy. Commissioner?
Yeah, I agree. The IT issues are challenging, and hopefully we'll have a good compromise there, or we'll prevail in the way that we think it's really important to retain control of our IT services and management of them, and considering how integral they are to our nationally recognized regulatory programs here, we feel like we're doing a good job and that we should retain control of those IT services. So that's a battle that's still being waged and yet to be determined, I guess.
All right, thank you, Julie. I would just add one comment, too, that the three of us are relatively a new commission. We've only worked together now for going on 4 months. But, you know, when people always ask the question, you got two new commissioners, how is that working out? And I would tell you that I'm very thankful that as we had this legislative battle back and forth, that we have a former state senator and a former policy guru with the governor's office that have really helped steer this budget through, because quite honestly, it's worked out very well. All three of us have brought different attributes to the table for this discussion, and I don't think we'd have had the, and I'll call it success that we had so far with our budget without the three of us using all the networks that have helped pull this together. So I'm hopeful that this IT piece comes together the way we would like it to in the next couple weeks. So,
well, Mr. Chairman, if I could add that one thing that we didn't mention that probably should be known by the folks that might be out there listening or watching us, and that is on the weights and measures. This could be a very big policy change. The commission once had six people in that department, is currently at four FTEs, and the way the bill came out from the governor's office was down to two, and right now I think it is at three. And if we lose that additional large-scale person, the amount of scales that we can go out and service will just probably be pretty much down to zero. That with only one person will be pretty much a quality control process on the large scales. I don't know how else you would really do that with only one person. So I think that's a reality that, you know, people need to be thinking about.
Sure, and I did actually just think of one more thing. It looks like there's also an amendment to have a study out there on the metrology lab. So a few years ago, the metrology lab was basically dismantled for the state of North Dakota. Now there's been a movement to maybe move that back to the Public Service Commission. So we'll see how this study turns out the next 2 years. But as Randy pointed out with the weights and measures, we may find that the next biennium that they're back to adding some weights and measures position once we actually get out there, because I think that the lens that people looked at what goes on in North Dakota has changed a lot. And of course it has with oil and gas, but we're seeing some of the services that are associated, the weights and measures, the scales, that while they may used to be on a declining trend line, now they're going back the other way. So I think we're going to, maybe this is probably not the end of it. So anything else?
No, this is an important transition time in the weights and measures area. And I think we've got a solid plan moving forward for quality assurance in the large scales and continued certification in the small scales. And, boy, it would be difficult to go any smaller, like you said, in terms of the growth that's occurring in North Dakota and the increased number of scales, commercial scales. So we've got to have a strong program. Fair scales, fair and accurate scales are a key component of commerce, and we have to have a good weights and measures program to maintain that.
Okay. Anything else? All right. With that, we have some items on consent. I would move passage of the consent items.
Second.
So
moved.
We have a motion and a second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
All right. Thank you, Darrell. Okay, moving to the regular agenda, item BK1. I move the commission adopt the consent order in the Public Service Commission Damage Prevention Enforcement Action concerning Phillips & Jordan, Inc., case number GS13-106.
Second.
The North Dakota PSC has determined the following, that Phillips & Jordan is a North Carolina corporation with principal offices in Knoxville, Tennessee, and they are registered to do business in North Dakota. WBI Energy is a Delaware corporation with principal offices here in Bismarck. The North Dakota PSC PSC staff conducted an investigation into a January 26, 2013 third-party damage complaint at the location 3.5 miles east of Alexander in McKenzie County, North Dakota. If you remember, this incident resulted in a loss of natural gas supply to approximately 1,000 customers in the towns of Watford City, Arnegard, and Alexander, North Dakota. It was actually a very big incident. Luckily, no one was injured, but there was 1,000 people at least that were out of natural gas during the winter. A little more background on it. Phillips requested a locate for the installation of a saltwater disposal site that they began to work on January 23rd. They did have a valid one-call ticket. Our staff was informed that the incident took place via phone call. And basically, the staff determined that Phillips was performing an excavation directly over a WBI transmission line, and they had not exposed the line prior to excavation. So, they had done everything right up to the point of when they got to the actual excavation. The protocol is they're supposed to expose the line prior to going over the top of it, and they did not do that. So what this order is today is that they have violated North Dakota Century Code by failing to conduct the excavation in a careful and prudent manner. This is a case where the maximum fine at this point in time is $5,000. And this is actually a consent order where the Public Service Commission advocacy staff talked to the company involved. They basically said, yep, we did this. They would not utilize the care required. And so the agreement of Phillips to pay a $3,000 fine to North Dakota PSC will be levied if this is passed, and I would recommend passage. And just a little background, the money that these companies pay in the fine, it goes to the general fund. It doesn't go to the Public Service Commission. So it's not like the commission is benefiting from these funds. It's a way of the money goes to the state of North Dakota. On this case particularly, this is now the second case where commissioners have heard about an incident and waited to see if a company would file a complaint on call before you dig. And basically, the previous case was that when the fatality took place up in the Tioga area, the commissioners were aware of it, and the company did not file a call before you dig violation. And so our staff went out and investigated. It turned out in that case we levied the max fine. In this case, it's the same kind of thing where nobody actually filed the complaint. Our staff went out and did the work that they were supposed to do and recommended a complaint to us, and that's where the consent order comes from. So we really, I don't see it as a role of the commission to be out there aggressively seeking violations of call before you dig. But there are occasions that where an incident takes place that we're watching very closely what happens. So this is one of those. I think that's all that I have in this case.
Yeah. We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion?
Yep.
Mr. Chairman, I feel like I maybe have been told this, and I'm just not remembering the answer now. But as far as liability, either to WBI or to people who were then without gas overnight, Does the contractor, does this relieve them of any liability because it's all settled, or do they, is that something that's just apart from us? And
my understanding of that is those are completely apart from us. We deal with the violation or potential violation of the call before you dig. In the case, I'll go back of the Tioga case, that the commission levied the max fine of $5,000, but there was also different types of suits that took place in the loss of that individual's life. So this may be information that's used in a separate legal proceedings is the best way that I understand it. And Alana's nodding your head, so. But yeah, these are separate proceedings.
Thank you.
I would offer that this, we lucked out on this case because I talked to the gas provider not long after this had happened, and it, cutting a line of this nature could have easily resulted in an explosion, and so, which would have been devastating to the equipment operator, obviously, and potentially many other people around. So the contractors just have got to start following. I think many of them are, but we have to be very diligent about following all the best practice standards. In this case, there was 1,000 customers out of gas for about 18 hours in the middle of January. So that's a bad result just in and of itself. We're lucky that nobody was injured. And so I think that I'm very pleased that the companies involved are going along and paying the fine, and that nobody was injured and service was restored. I learned from the service provider that when the gas lines are cut like this, they go out and repair the gas lines, which they did. Apparently, the cut occurred at about 2:10. Repairs started at 2:45. The line was completely repaired by 7, but it wasn't until the following morning at 9:45 that the service was restored to all but 5 customers, and those 5 customers were without service until later in the day at 5 o'clock that next day. And the gas provider has to walk from house to house and light every single pilot light to get the gas back on to do that safely. So this is a big deal. Hopefully it's a learning opportunity again for all the contractors involved to follow all the best practices that their industry demands.
Thank you, Julie. Andy?
Julie brought out a good point that this is obviously very severe. And in our current matrix that we have with a max of $5,000 fines is that we've levied one max fine of $5,000 for a fatality. This fine is $3,000, which seemed to be in that range of this is very serious, but given the current schematic of what we can fine, that's where this $3,000 dropped out in my mind. It'll be interesting to see when the three of us get together for the next one of these cases because the rules will change. Once this fine goes to $25,000, that'll be, you know, the fatality will, I would think, would change in that matrix and some of these things. So it'll be very interesting to see how this all plays out. But I'm looking forward to having the ability to, I don't like to fine people, but if we've got companies that are non-compliant numerous times, we've got to be able to send a stronger message to them. So in this particular case, these are WBI has been involved before, but they've all been on the side of their infrastructure has been hit. So this is the first that I can recall that we've heard anything from Phillips. So with that, I would recommend passage.
Any further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Thank you, Darrell. Item BK2. I move the Commission adopt a consent order in the Public Service Commission Damage Prevention Enforcement Action concerning WBI Energy Transmission, Inc., case number GS-13-129.
Second.
The PSC staff has determined the following. The WBI is a Delaware company doing business in North Dakota. The Davinia is a Minnesota corporation with principal offices in Moorhead, Minnesota. The Commission became aware on January 28th that there was an incident that took place at approximately 5:35 p.m. Central Time when an excavator, Avenia, hit and punctured a 2-inch high-pressure line that is owned and operated by WBI. This incident resulted in the loss of natural gas supply to approximately 111 residents and commercial customers in Taylor, North Dakota. So as you can see, this is very similar to the previous case where a line is hit, we've lost gas services, and in this case, 111 residents in Taylor, that's pretty much the whole town. So it was the commission became aware of this very quickly. similar as the previous case, that no one filed damage prevention violation request or a call before you dig violation. So we asked our staff to go out and look into it a little bit deeper, and they did. And so basically what they came up with is that the company Avenia had done things exactly correct. They utilized one call. They had done the things that they were supposed to do. They were performing an excavation. So you kind of wonder, step back, that, you know, what exactly happened. And that's where, when I talked with staff, when we were doing the initial investigations, it looked like everything seemed to be going pretty well. But when you got farther into the details, WBI did mark the lines, but they did not mark all their lines. They did not mark a lateral that went into the main line. So when Avenia was out there doing the work, they had no idea there was a lateral. They hit the lateral. They punctured it. And then, of course, the loss of services took place. Now, this is the first time that I'm aware of that we've had a case where the company did follow the rules, but there was a mislocate. I mean, mislocates have happened before, I'm certain of that, but this is the first time that I've seen where there's been an incident that took place. So some of the things the WBI has done, they immediately accepted responsibility for the incident once the staff worked through all the details. The individual that did the locate was immediately disqualified from performing additional locates, and WBI is going to be looking at their whole training pipeline, how they're training folks for locates, because we certainly don't want to have these type of things happen again. So in this particular case, we concluded that the violation, the WBI did violate North Dakota Century Code by failing to mark the location of an underground facility, and the recommended fine here, the consent decree recommends the fine is $3,000, and I agree that this is appropriate. But similar to the previous case, I'm very thankful that folks are doing the call before you dig, but it's two sides of the coin. We now have the companies that are calling. We need to make sure the companies doing the locates are doing them properly. And in this case, the damages have been paid for, are going to be paid for. No loss of life, but we did have a loss of services for quite some period of time. So I would recommend passage of this motion.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion?
One comment that, you know, a lot of these companies doing the locates, I know, are getting very fatigued by all the locates that they have to do. And, you know, when you're fatigued with something and overwhelmed with it, it increases the chances of mistakes. I'm sure mistakes will happen in the future, but that one call bill that increases the timeline from 10 days to 21 days could go a long ways in alleviating some of the fatigue of doing these and, you know, hopefully help prevent mistakes from happening like this.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. I'm pleased that the company is using it as a training lesson. It's probably a pretty powerful one, I'm sure. And so I think that's a real positive step. And the changes in the one call law have got to help in this area as well, helping to relieve the pressure on staff. They won't hopefully have as demanding of a schedule of locates to perform if the locates last longer and if there aren't as many repeats. So hopefully we're moving in the right direction there.
Okay, is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
All right, thank you, Darrell. Item BK3. I move the commission published notice of the 2013-2014 telecommunications relay service surcharge in the daily newspapers of general circulation in the state of North Dakota, case number PU13-164.
Second.
In April of 1993, Governor Ed Schaefer approved House Bill 1028 that established a program to provide specialized telecommunications services and equipment to the communication impaired. The relay service program is funded by an access line surcharge paid by customers of the local exchange companies. The relay program is administered by the ITD Department of the State of North Dakota. Before June of each year, the Public Service Commission calculates the amount of surcharge based on the cost data and other information provided by the Information Technology Department. The Commission has calculated the fees for this two-year period to be included in the bills to be 4 cents per access line per month. So basically, this is almost every company in the state, wirelines, traditionals, ILEX, CLEX. A little background on the fee: 2013, 4 cents, 2012, 4 cents, 2011, 4 cents. Going back to 2009 and 2010, it was 5 cents, and in 2008, it was 3 cents. So you can see the numbers fluctuated a little bit in the five-year period, but the 4 cents seems to be holding pretty strong. I think it's a worthwhile program, and we really have never, that I'm aware of, had any calls or concerns about the charge, and the services are certainly put to good use.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion?
Commissioner, do you happen to know how many people use these services? Have you ever seen figures like that?
I do not, but I would ask Mr. Fawn.
We don't get that information from the companies.
It's certainly a follow-up question that is worthwhile that we could talk with the Department of Human Services, because I suspect my wife is a deaf and hard of hearing, special ed kind of person, so I know that it's worthwhile. She spends a lot of time with kids and those type of devices. But that's a good question we'll have to follow up on. Thank you, Julie.
Mr. Chairman, my question is, what are we noticing in the newspapers?
The fact
that the service is there, or that people have to pay 4 cents for it?
We're noticing that it's a 4 cents fee. And so if someone did not like that 4 cents fee, they could certainly request some type of... Oh, Alana's given me the no. Alana, correct my challenge. Publication of the charge. So if someone did not agree with the charge?
It's not a notice of hearing.
Okay. Legislative? We're following the law. So we're instituting the law. So we're noticing what the charges are, following the law. So if someone did not like it, that makes sense. Then they would go back and we'd have to retool House Bill, whatever it was here, House Bill 1028, a good point. So it's not a notice because we're not noticing an opportunity for informal or informal. We're following the law, which says that these fees should be calculated, divided by the number of people that are paying in, come up with the cost of 4 cents. And so if someone doesn't like that, I guess they would have to go legislative.
Commissioner, there might be an opportunity to go to ITD through the procurement process of how they obtain a vendor and what they're paying for this service, because that's where that cost is coming from, a vendor to ITD to provide the service. And all we're doing is dividing the cost by the lines.
Thank you.
Correct? And publishing after we make do the division. So if there's a data argument, it would be through the procurement process at ITD.
Okay. Thank you, Lana. Okay.
Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Thank you, Darrell. For item BK4, I move the Commission issue a Notice of Hearing and Public Service Commission, Kindred Plumbing and Heating, Inc., Damage Prevention Enforcement, Case Number PU12303.
Second.
In March of this year, the PSC advocacy staff filed a formal complaint alleging violations of North Dakota One Call, requesting the Commission find that Kindred Plumbing and Heating, Inc., responsible for violating One Call law, and impose a penalty of $1,500. On March 27th of this year, the PSC found the complaint states a prima facie case and served the complaint on the respondent. This case is a little different than the previous two. The previous two, the people that had allegedly done the complaints agreed that they had made those mistakes. They filed a consent decree, and we moved forward. In this particular case, we've not heard back from Kindred Plumbing and Heating. And so, quite honestly, this is now the third one of these that we've had with this company. And so I will tell you that my personal viewpoint is the staff recommendation on this is $1,500, but that's just a recommendation that will come to the commission should they request to hear, or should they actually show up at the hearing. A public hearing in this matter will be scheduled during scheduling today, but this is one of those cases that it's just a transition follow-through that, the companies certainly have their rights as well as anybody else that may want to come to these hearings. So with that today, all this does is set the date for the hearing. A little bit of information. Like I said, this is the third one of these that we've dealt with this company. And they're all basically the same thing, that Otter Tail has filed the complaint that Kindred Plumbing and Heating was doing work in their area and struck some of their facilities. So this will be interesting how this plays itself out.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion?
Commissioner, on this case, was there actually a line struck, or is this company just guilty of continually digging before they call and we see, or before the locates are made, and we're seeing evidence that they've dug, like the whole trench is dug, and the project is over when the people show up to perform the locates. So it's more of a, not that there has been a strike, but that they're performing in ways that they're going to eventually do some damage. I can't quite tell from the materials that I have.
I would say, Commissioner, at this point, I would not say much of anything because this might be a hearing in front of us and go back and work those questions through staff.
Okay.
Because that's the point of it's when we have a consent decree, I think it's very easy to walk through what happened because both parties kind of agree.
Mm-hmm.
But in these cases, I'd hold my thoughts till we get to the hearing.
Sounds good.
Thank you.
Okay, is there any further discussion? Since none, all in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
All right, thank you, Daryl. That concludes the items in my portfolio. Commissioner Christman.
I move the commission adopt an order in case number GE-13-163, canceling facility-based grain buyer license number 2102, issued to CHS Incorporated, St. Paul, Minnesota, at the Menango, North Dakota location, and ordering the business at Menango, North Dakota is discontinued.
Second.
Mr. Chairman, the licensing division received a request to discontinue business from CHS for its facility at Menango, and CHS is no longer receiving grain at this warehouse, and it has been closed, so we can eliminate the license.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Okay. Anything else, Commissioner Chris? We're good. All right.
Sure. Small folder today.
Good for you. All right. Commissioner Fedorchuk.
I move the commission issue a notice of opportunity for hearing and assess a $5,000 filing fee in the joint application of Enbridge Pipelines North Dakota LLC and Enbridge Pipelines Bakken LP to transfer certificate of corridor compatibility number 118 and route permit number 128 to Enbridge Pipelines Bakken LP, case number PU-13-153.
Second.
This is the second transfer of corridor and permit that we've gotten from Enbridge to Enbridge Pipelines North Dakota to Enbridge Pipelines Bakken. This pipeline is a 11 miles, 12 inch diameter line 26, beginning at milepost 29 and ending at milepost 40, located in Burke County. I want to grab my map here. I can actually give you towns. It begins near Keniston and ends at Lignite, North Dakota. We provided the first certificate of corridor compatibility and route permit back in 2011. This pipeline was actually put into service way back in 1964, 1965, so before there were siting laws. And then we updated it. They made some improvements to the pipe in 2010 and 11, so we provided them with the certificate and the permit back then, the corridor certificate and permit. Now they want to transfer it to their different company, Enbridge Bakken. This is a notice of opportunity for a hearing. If people have any comments they wish to provide, they can do so in writing, or they can request a hearing. We must receive all of that by May 29th of 2013.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor, signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Do you have a new one? Okay. All right. I move the commission deem complete the applications of Dakota Gasification Company for a corridor certificate, a route permit, and for a waiver of procedures and time schedules concerning the construction of a 3.5-mile, 10-inch diameter natural gas pipeline in Mercer County, North Dakota, and issue a notice of filings and notice of hearing, case number PU-13-22.
Second.
OK. On February 28th, Basin filed an application for a certificate of corridor compatibility route permit to construct a 3.5-mile, 10-inch diameter natural gas pipeline in Mercer County. The pipeline basically connects from Dakota Gasification to the Antelope Valley Station power generation facility. The company is doing this to comply with the new MATS regulations. Previously, they used diesel as their fuel source to start their generation facility. Now, this will provide natural gas, results in less emissions, and so it's a pretty straightforward project. It's going from one plant to another. Most all of the lines are land is owned by the companies or the coal company that's right out adjacent to these facilities. So it's pretty straightforward. This is a notice for an opportunity for a public hearing, or actually we're going to be having a public hearing, and we'll be scheduling that at our admin meeting, I believe.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Is it for me?
Okay, thank you, Commissioner. Okay, a couple notes. We have, there's no informal this afternoon. We'll stay engaged in the legislative discussion downstairs. Next Friday, we have a formal hearing over in the Mandan City Hall dealing with MDU's natural gas pipeline, which will feed their potential Heskett station. Looking ahead, regular scheduled commission meetings. We have a MISO briefing coming on May 9th that may be of interest, dealing with the Northern Area Study and Manitoba Hydro Wind Studies, to where potentially 1,000 megawatts of power from Canada might be dropping into the grid. So we're interested to see how that all might all play out. The commission is watching the whole MISO market very closely right now. The cost of power in MISO is down to about 2 cents a kilowatt. So it's really changing some of the dynamics of some of the energy producing areas. And other than that, the only other thing I'd say is tonight Mike Berg's having a going away, so check with Jimmy, get the details. And I'd like to welcome Ryan Norell, our new attorney. So now we're back to two attorneys. The only concern I have about Ryan is, are you in fact a UND graduate? Or
yes,
so that was one of the screening processes that would have been for Commissioner Fedorchuk. I would say that it may have been. So I don't have anything else other than my colleagues. Randy or Julie, any closing comments?
I have none, no.
Okay. Any questions from anyone on the audience?
We won't say anything about NDSU not having a law school.
Are you saying we should propose that in next session, Dave?
Was it BK2 where that happened at Taylor, North Dakota? Do you have the date?
Yes, I do. Let's see here.
You may have said the date, and I didn't hear it.
Evening of January 28th, we received the phone call. So relatively, these two incidents took place almost back-to-back, it seemed like, if I remember right. Yeah, one was January 26th, and the second one was January 28th. So it was two strikes that dealt with losing of natural gas for heating in relatively a very short period of time. And that's where it really caught our radar screen as the commission, because, you know, it was a lot of calls from individuals that were out of heating fuel.
Okay. And so in this case, they both companies, one was Phillips and Jordan, the other was WBI, they have signed a consent decree. They're okay with it. They're okay with the fines, so that's everything is done with them then?
Everything is buttoned up in both these cases. They've signed the consent decree. Today is where the commission agreed with the consent decree that was between our advocacy staff and the company. And then, to my knowledge, we actually received the checks from one of the companies yesterday, and the other one, maybe both of them. So this should be the end of these cases. Now, all these companies involved have got the spreadsheet of, now we're up to 24 of these that we're dealing with. So if these companies are involved in future incidents, that would weigh, in my mind, in the matrix of the fines if it's repeat violations.
On a different subject, you did complete the public hearings or public input sessions on NSPXL. What was your impression? Were they well attended? What were the questions type like?
Well, Commissioner Fedorchuk had the lead on that, and I'll let her answer that one, I guess.
They were not well attended. There was one customer in Fargo who participated, and there was one reporter in Minot who participated. It was right in the throes of that snowstorm, so the timing was really bad. So it's hard to say if they would have been better attended had that weather not kind of kept people indoors. It's difficult to say.
The one thing we did consider, though, is the storm was really bad in Bismarck, but we did talk with the company and follow the lead. You know, Fargo, NDSU was operating at normal, and so Fargo and Grand Forks and Minot were not hit nearly as hard as Bismarck was. But you just never quite know, and we've continued to struggle with getting people to come to all of our hearings. So.
And that was more of an input session for people to learn. They still have plenty of time to participate in the process, and they can attend that our hearing at the end of August. If they have specific issues and if they want to get involved, they can do so ahead of time, call our office, and we can connect them to the right people.
Given the complexity of the case, how much time have you budgeted for that hearing at the end of August?
I believe it's 3 days, isn't it? I know it's at least two that we have for that hearing. I think what it is, it's 2 days for sure, and if we need to stay in the hearing, we will. You talked about the complexity of it. One of the things that I was waiting for was the public input sessions to be completed to see if there's any questions from the public that I might want to explore further. But I got to have a letter that I'm working on that's going to go to the company. Hopefully next week we get it there, dealing with specifically what we've talked about before, about the concerns about the return on equity, how these advanced determination and prudences are actually saving the customer money. And I actually, quite honestly, the last couple of days have seen a lot of concerns by Ben Falke, the head of Xcel Energy, that he is completely supportive of reduction of CO2 emissions by 20% by 2020. And I'm concerned that you've got the CEO of a major company out there committing to things that maybe aren't good policy. So I'm going to be asking a lot of questions of Xcel's leadership of how they can make those kind of commitments without ever talking to the regulators about their goals. So I think from my viewpoint, I think a lot of the ADPs will lay out that we think that these are prudent investments they've made as far as those who are looking at the cost of it, but more of holistically where they're going with the company and how they're spending some of their time and money is what I suspect I'll be spending a lot of time on.
It's also concerning when the head of a company is making those kind of commitments that ultimately the ratepayers are going to have to pay for. And so that's where we need to be involved in that process and be looking carefully. And also the policymakers who are setting these standards need, I think, to be looking carefully at the costs of some of these standards and the benefits at the same time.
Just for clarity, I think the public input session meetings extend into September. Weren't one or two of them in September?
Yeah, that's right. We scheduled those in September, the hearings. The hearing for this rate case is in the first or second week of September. It's not August.
We're mixing apples
Yeah,
here.
We're mixing. That's the
late August.
The hearings on the...
The big power line.
The power line are in September. Okay. This is August. August 26th and 27th sticks out in my head. I don't know.
Randy opened the door on that. I believe we'll be solidifying and scheduling, but September 4th and 5th and 13th, the commission's going to be holding three hearings dealing with the Basin Electric 345 kV line. And so we've got two major projects that are going to converge about the same time in front of the commission. And I know staff has been heavily engaged in both of those. So I'm looking forward to the legislative session being finished so we can really spend the time required to stay abreast of all those big cases.
And by now, you probably know what the acronym DELTA means.
I don't know if I know that, Dave.
Doesn't ever leave the airport. Or don't expect luggage to arrive.
This personal experience, Dave?
Yes. When you talked about the
snowstorm, 37 hours in the Minneapolis airport is no fun.
Ooh.
You should have called Jordy, Dave.
I should have.
He was at U of M.
You weren't
Laura,
on the plane, were you? You weren't, like,
no.
Sitting on the tarmac.
No, no. But we were kind of like a Borg moving from gate to gate to gate. And at one point, they had a 50-passenger plane in there and 71 people on the waiting list.
Oh, my goodness. Did you have to audition for a seat, or how did you get on?
You had to do whatever you could. But I finally got a seat at the 7 p.m. flight on Monday night. I was supposed to leave at 9 a.m. Sunday morning.
Oh, my. Could have hitchhiked home sooner, quicker.
All right. Anything else, Dave? All right. With that, we'll close the regular scheduled commission meeting.